happen in a conflict, but it has happened here. And the remedy, when you've reached the stage of famine, the remedy is not more food. Absolutely more food is needed. But for people who are experiencing that extreme stage of malnutrition, that requires an immediate intensive medical intervention. And where are you going to find that in a country now where the hospitals have been destroyed? It's for the people who've reached that stage, it's too late. And any effort to bring in more food is absolutely necessary, but anything that comes in now, it's too little too late. And the reason we've come to this point is because of Israel's obstruction. And to see that written in a report, a joint report from the State Department and the Department of Defense to Congress is ludicrous.
And I'm David Brower, David R. Brower. And I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States. And that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland. And I wish you had a lot more company.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting lightly.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to hear on other stations, because other stations just don't play jazz and blues in a black vein the way I do here.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a federal appeals court upholds an earlier order. Oregon must release people accused of a crime from jail if they can't find them a public defender within 7 days.
Portland police shoot and wound a resident while serving a warrant.
And the Oregon coast is closed for shellfish harvesting after a biotoxin sickens 20.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 31st, 2024. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. A federal appeals court upheld an order to release Oregon criminal defendants who don't have a lawyer. Last year, U.S. District Judge Michael McShane ordered counties to release people accused of a crime from jail if they're not provided a lawyer within 7 days of their initial court appearance. That rule will now go into effect immediately unless the state appeals. This is related to the public defender crisis in Oregon. There are not enough public defenders in Oregon to represent accused people who can't afford their own lawyer. The right to a lawyer is part of the right to a fair trial, and it was enshrined in a landmark 1963 Supreme Court decision, Gideon v. Wainwright. As of today, there are 55 people in Oregon who are unrepresented and have been in jail custody for more than 7 days. There are 146 total people in custody without a lawyer. The most are in Southern Oregon's Jackson County. There are currently 42. Multnomah County has 23 people in jail without a lawyer, and in Marion County, there are 18. Ninth Circuit Judge John B. Owens wrote the majority opinion. KBOO's Althea Billings reads an excerpt from his ruling.
Circuit Judge Owens writes, "The state arrests a citizen and incarcerates him pending trial. Days, weeks, and months pass without any legal representation. He seeks relief from the authorities. Surely a lawyer should help him? In response, he gets a shoulder shrug, a promise that they are working on it, and nothing more. He remains in jail without legal counsel or any relief in sight." You might think this passage comes from a 1970s State Department report on some autocratic regime in the Soviet bloc. Unfortunately, we do not need to go back in time or across an ocean to witness this Kafkaesque scene. This is the state of Oregon in 2024. The Supreme Court outlawed this practice more than 60 years ago in Gideon v. Wainwright, which held that the 6th and 14th Amendments guaranteed trial counsel for indigent criminal defendants. The court explained, "Lawyers in criminal courts are necessities, not luxuries. The right of one charged with a crime to counsel may not be deemed fundamental and essential to fair trials in some countries, but it is in ours." Yet, due to an ongoing public defense crisis of its own creation, Oregon does not provide indigent criminal defendants their fundamental right to counsel, despite Gideon's clear command. For several reasons, there are not enough qualified attorneys in Oregon to represent criminal defendants, some of whom remain detained without counsel. Even worse, Oregon cannot proceed in prosecuting these defendants unless and until an attorney is appointed to represent them. Accordingly, an innocent person may languish in jail for months awaiting trial, simply because no lawyer has been provided to review or investigate his case. Those that manage to appear before a judge can count on little help and scant information. When one petitioner asked the judge at a pretrial hearing when he would be appointed counsel, the judge simply responded, "I don't know." When the petitioner said that continuing without a lawyer was unconstitutional, the judge responded that the petitioner won't get a disagreement from me or from the prosecutor that you should have a lawyer. It is an unfortunate circumstance that we are in this state. The hearing then proceeded with the petitioner left without counsel. This is no anomaly. The record contains many similar stories, including a petitioner who remained in jail without counsel for nearly a year. A class of incarcerated indigent criminal defendants awaiting trial in Oregon challenged this untenable situation via habeas corpus in federal court. Rather than avoid a judicial jailbreak by making counsel available to defendants, as the Constitution requires, Oregon insisted on fighting the solution. After extensive litigation, the district court issued a preliminary injunction requiring, among other things, that counsel be provided within 7 days of initial appearance, and, failing this, defendants must be released from custody, subject to reasonable conditions imposed by Oregon Circuit Court judges. Considering the extraordinary and extremely prejudicial circumstances facing criminal defendants in Oregon in direct violation of Gideon, we cannot say that the district court abused its discretion in issuing this preliminary injunction, and so we affirm.
That was KBOO's Althea Billings reading an excerpt from the decision written by Ninth Circuit Court Judge John B. Owens. It is not yet known whether the state will appeal the decision, which would require counties to release people who are in custody for a crime without a lawyer for more than 7 days. Some 3,284 people don't have a lawyer in criminal trials in Oregon. The public defender crisis has been a focus for Oregon Governor Tina Kotek this week. On Wednesday, she told agency leaders they needed to quickly come up with a plan to fix this very problem, underrepresented defendants in jail. The Oregon Public Defense Commission will switch into the control of the executive starting next year. Kotek wrote a letter to the commission attempting to add some urgency to addressing the crisis. Last year, the state legislature pumped millions of dollars into public defense, but a meaningful resolution has not been created. Kotek wrote to the 13-member Public Defense Commission, saying the state, quote, cannot allow the current state of affairs to be normalized, and that they need to create a plan to, quote, eliminate Oregon's underrepresented client crisis in both the near and long term by August 1st.
A man was shot and wounded by a member of Portland's tactical unit on Wednesday. This is the third officer-involved shooting this year, all of which have involved members of the Bureau's Special Emergency Response Team, known by the acronym CERT. According to the Portland Police Bureau, officers with the Internet Crimes Against Children Unit, the Crisis Negotiation Team, and CERT executed a warrant in the Russell neighborhood in the pre-dawn hours on Wednesday, May 29th. In a timeline released yesterday, PPB claims that after ending communication with the crisis negotiation team, the victim exited the residence holding a rifle and was shot by a CERT member. The name of the involved member has not been released, but PPB told KBOO that they had been a member of the Bureau for 8 years. In 2022, then-Police Chief Chuck Lavelle issued an executive order extending the deadline for releasing involved officers' names from 24 hours to 15 days. We could expect to learn more by June 13th. The victim was then taken into custody before being transported to an area hospital where he remains pending booking into the Multnomah County Detention Center. No information on his condition has been released. This is the third officer-involved shooting by PPB so far this year. Matthew Lee Holland was shot and killed by members of CERT on January 14th. Richard Sean Perez, 45, was shot and killed by CERT members on May 6th.
Another police shooting occurred last night in rural Linn County. According to an Oregon State Police press release, Linn County Sheriff's deputies responded to a domestic disturbance call involving a firearm at 8:16 p.m. on Spiesel Road, north of Sweet Home. The press release states that when the deputies arrived, a man armed with a rifle, quote, advanced aggressively towards one of them, did not comply with demands to lower the rifle, and one deputy fired an undisclosed number of shots. The man apparently died at the scene. OSP, which is investigating the incident, identified the 45-year-old man who was killed, but has not yet identified the deputy who fired the shots. KABU will update this story as more information is released. This is the second police shooting in Linn County this year. On April 28th, a man was killed and a woman injured on I-5 near Coburg when they were fired upon by multiple state troopers and Linn County Sheriff's deputies after a car chase.
The entire Oregon coast is now closed to shellfish harvesting due to dangerous levels of paralytic biotoxin that has been making people sick and has even sent a few people to the hospital. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife announced the closure at a press conference this morning due to, quote, unprecedented levels that we're seeing, especially in bay clams and oysters, end quote. There are many types of marine biotoxins that are a natural presence in the ocean, although usually at levels that are not harmful to humans. Paralytic shellfish poisoning, also known as red tide, is the most toxic. At least 20 people so far have become ill after eating shellfish that was harvested along the Oregon coast. Parts of the Northern California and Washington coasts have also been closed due to the same toxin. Matthew Hunter is the shellfish program manager with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Hunter said that we are seeing worsening waterborne toxic events due to the warming climate. Quote, we've shown that the changing of the oceans has definitely increased the frequency, the duration, and the toxicity of all our biotoxins. That's definitely something that we're going to have to do adaptive management for, end quote.
Trump is convicted on all charges, a historic first sure to roil the election. The U.S. Supreme Court sides with the NRA in a legal case. And former FBI Director Comey has regrets over Clinton's emails. With those stories and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This was a rigged trial by a conflicted judge who was corrupt. The real verdict is going to be November 5th by the people.
After the New York jury found former President Donald Trump guilty, he again blamed the Biden administration for his legal problems without offering proof. The first president ever convicted of a felony is expected to appeal the judgment that he falsified business records to cover up hush money payments to a porn star. Illinois Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy says Trump's guilty verdict is a somber moment for the United States, not something to celebrate. But he says it's a necessary confirmation of the rule of law.
You know, he was found guilty by a jury of his peers, and that's kind of how it should be. And so he's entitled to all of his process and due rights at this point.
Sandy Kane, commonly known as the naked cowgirl of Times Square, says she used to support Trump. But after COVID and January 6th, the verdict means she has a new message for him.
So I hope you go to jail, and I really do. I think if we did what you did, we'd be in jail already. So there wouldn't even be a trial.
Meanwhile, President Joe Biden spoke to black voters in Philadelphia, saying Trump has been unhinged since the 2020 election.
What do you think he would have done on January 6th if black Americans had stormed the Capitol? I don't think he'd be talking about pardons.
Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts is refusing to meet with congressional Democrats who want Justice Samuel Alito to recuse himself from January 6th cases. But Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal says Alito has ruined his credibility by flying flags associated with the insurrection.
He owes it to the Congress and to the American people to explain about these flags, which are political statements in support of Trump and the insurrection.
The Supreme Court also just ruled unanimously that the state of New York violated the NRA's free speech by encouraging companies to stop doing business with the group after the Parkland shooting. David Cole with the ACLU represented the NRA.
Government officials are free to urge people not to support political groups they oppose. What they cannot do is use their regulatory might to add "or else" to that request.
Former FBI Director James Comey tells CNN he regretted the Hillary Clinton email case after she blamed him for costing her women's votes in 2016.
Oh, I hated the situation, but I bear her no ill will. And I hope we had nothing to do with the outcome, but we were just trying to do the right thing. And I still think we did the right thing.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
No matter where I'm looking.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 46 degrees. Tomorrow, those clouds continue with a daytime high of 70 degrees. Today in history, in 2008, Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt breaks the world record in the 100-meter sprint with 9.72 seconds. The quote of the day is from Joseph Boxhall, who was the fourth officer of the RMS Titanic and one of the first people rescued by a responding ship. Upon being told by a woman in another lifeboat that Titanic had gone down with everyone on board, Boxhall gallantly responded, quote, "Shut up, lady," end quote.
And people that I talk with, I call them by your name.
Say that although voting barriers still exist, it's important to recognize a key milestone in being recognized as U.S. citizens. Many organizations are marking the 100th anniversary of a key federal act this weekend. Mike Moen has more in North Dakota.
In 1924, what's now known as the Snyder Act was signed into law. Historians say a key element of the act was establishing voting rights for indigenous people. Jody DeLong, a social science instructor at Turtle Mountain Community College, says it came after a number of natives signed up for military service and fought in World War I. Despite efforts to afford them more rights, he says natives were still shut out of the democratic process for a long time.
It wasn't until some 40 years later that every state made it allowable for Native Americans to vote.
Today, he points to restrictive rules that still make voting difficult, including North Dakota's voter ID law. And some regional tribes have gone to court over redistricting matters. I'm Mike Moen.
A 14-year probe into discrimination against Native students in Rapid City, South Dakota schools ends, and the findings were published this week. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A resolution ends a long-term investigation into the Rapid City Area School District, orbiting claims of discrimination toward Native students. Some of the findings published this week are 14 years in the making. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's C.J. Keene reports.
Beginning in December of 2010, the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights started looking closely at the district's disciplinary record towards Native students. The investigation found Native students were disciplined more harshly than white counterparts. Superintendent Nicole Swigart says the district has been complying with the DOE's investigation for over a decade. She also says the district is already making efforts to address issues noted in the resolution.
We have changed a ton of things, including our attendance policy, our truancy referrals, our discipline matrix. We've added restorative justice. We've added conscious discipline. We've really worked at making sure that all of our staff is trained in that work.
Swigart has a background as a Title I-D principal and was not the superintendent in 2010 at the onset of the investigation. Title I-D is a Department of Education program focused on at-risk youth.
A kid could walk out the door 18 times and get dropped for non-attendance, but that 19th time might be the time they're going to be successful. So we've really worked at re-enrolling kids. We believe everybody needs an education, so we're going to be there to provide it. We are not a push-out program. We are a pull-in program.
RCAS has the highest demographic of Native students out of any district in the state except those on reservations. As a result, Swigart says ensuring Native students and parents feel seen is crucial to the district's mission.
I've really had an open door policy for Native American issues. Let's sit down. What can we do together? I have gone down when a student or a parent feels that a situation at a building wasn't handled correctly. I've met with them outside of the school and outside of my office because I don't want it to be an intimidating conversation. I want to hear what they have to say.
Year over year, the district reports a significant increase in the rate of Native students graduating, though Swigart says she wants to see that number climb further. For National Native News, I'm CJ Keene in Rapid City.
Native American, Republican, U.S. lawmakers from Oklahoma took to social media to respond to former President Donald Trump's hush money trial, where Trump was found guilty Thursday on 34 felony counts. Congressman Tom Cole posted on Facebook, "This verdict against President Trump is a farce and weaponization of the courts. Thankfully, President Trump is a fighter and will appeal and move forward. This is a sad example of political gamesmanship. We must restore faith in our judicial system," the post said. U.S. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen on X said, "This is a very dark day in American history. The far left has unleashed a disgraceful, unprecedented assault on the leading Republican candidate for president. President Trump will fight the sham of a conviction, and the American people will have the ultimate word this November," Mullen said on X. As of early Friday morning, there were no social media reactions from Native Democratic Congresswomen Sharice Davids from Kansas or Mary Peltola from Alaska. Dine College and Arizona State University have unveiled plans for a Bachelor of Arts in Navajo Law. Officials say it's a groundbreaking initiative aimed at fostering legal expertise within the Navajo Nation. It's being led by Patrick Blackwater, Dean of the School of Business and Social Sciences at the Tribal College, and advocated by Stacy Leeds, Dean of the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law at ASU. Blackwater says there's a need for legal professionals deeply versed in Navajo fundamental law, federal and state statutes, and Navajo Nation legal frameworks, which are crafted in the program. Leeds calls it a monumental step toward educating legal professionals who will address access to justice issues on the Navajo Nation and beyond. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Today marks the 15th anniversary of the murder of Dr. George Tiller, a prominent physician and abortion provider in Wichita, Kansas. Tiller was on the verge of starting a dermatology practice in 1970 when his parents and sister were killed in a plane crash, and he returned to Wichita to take over his father's clinic. He soon discovered that the parents had been performing illegal abortions in secret for many years, and his death had left Wichita without a safe provider of abortion care. After the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973, Tiller began specializing in abortion care and soon became a nationally prominent provider, seen as both hero and villain, depending on where one stood on the topic politically. His clinic, called Women's Healthcare Services, was at one time only one of three in the nation that provided late-term abortions. He and his family and colleagues faced constant threats of violence from the 1980s onward and were subject to daily anti-choice demonstrations in the 2000s. The clinic was firebombed in 1986, and Tiller survived an assassination attempt in 1993, after which he often wore a bulletproof vest. Tiller was devoted to his Christian faith and was acting as an usher at Reformation Lutheran Church on May 31, 2009, when an extremist entered and fatally shot him in the head. His former clinic is currently occupied by the Trust Women Foundation, which continues to offer abortion care in the wake of Kansas voters rejecting a statewide abortion ban following the overturning of Roe v. Wade in 2022. Tiller described his personal philosophy this way, quote, patients are emotionally, mentally, morally, spiritually, and physically competent to struggle with complex health issues and come to decisions that are appropriate for them. End quote.
Returning to Oregon news, PacifiCorp's attempts to limit its liability in future wildfires have failed. The electric power giant was ordered last summer by a Multnomah County jury to pay tens of millions for its role in the 2020 Labor Day fires. PacifiCorp power lines started multiple blazes, and the jury ruled the utility acted negligently in failing to shut off power despite warnings from state officials. Following the decision, PacifiCorp sought to limit its wildfire liability to economic damages. This would have ruled out punitive, emotional, and other types of damages if the company was found guilty again. This week, the Oregon Public Utility Commission rejected PacifiCorp's request. In their decision, they wrote the request was too broad and likely violated the law. PacifiCorp is the Portland-based parent company of Pacific Power and operates across the Pacific Northwest. It's one of several utilities owned by Warren Buffett's conglomerate, Berkshire Hathaway. PacifiCorp argues it is unfairly exposed financially as a, quote, de facto insurer of last resort in a more frequent extreme weather environment, end quote. Regulators were receptive to this argument, but argue the utility's proposal is not the right way to address this. Damon Mott's story is the director of the Oregon Sierra Club. They praised the decision, saying, quote, this is a really big win for Oregon ratepayers and every Oregonian who is impacted by the threat of wildfire. This is a wildfire liability issue. We don't dispute that. But we believe utilities should be held accountable for their actions and they should be investing and acting on wildfire mitigation, end quote.
While Tillamook County, Oregon might be famous for its cheese, many of its residents struggle with food insecurity. The issue is especially acute in the summer when kids are out of school. Levi Johnson is the Tillamook branch operations lead for the Oregon Food Bank. He says the breakfasts and lunches some students receive at school may be the only meals they get all day. His organization is working to fill in those hunger gaps during the summer.
We work with certain programs in our community. We call them summer feeding programs, where they're trying to set up distribution locations to provide free lunch to those students to help fill in that gap and that need to find a meal to get them through the day.
Food insecurity levels in Tillamook County are higher than the state average at nearly 12%, compared to about 10% according to the Oregon Hunger Task Force. Food insecurity is even higher for kids in the county at 19%. The county is home to about 27,000 people. Johnson says the biggest barrier for residents is distance because of Tillamook's rural nature.
We have a lot of areas where to get to the nearest emergency food box site or even a meal site, they could be looking at a 30-minute drive alone, let alone a lot of folks that we serve don't have that kind of transportation, so they're either having to walk or bike.
Johnson notes people can find local food sites at OregonFoodFinder.org, which is available in 19 languages. He says the biggest challenge for food sites in Tillamook County is the need for more volunteers.
A lot of programs we've seen in the past few years close just because they're just not seeing the volunteers coming in to help them. And so we're trying our best to get more people involved.
That was Levi Johnson with the Oregon Food Bank.
Warm weather means more time out in the yard. Maybe it's time to build some sort of structure. Or a compelling introduction to Pearl Stark from KPOV Bend with the Point Puzzle, a weekly radio puzzle challenging listeners with words and logic.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you for a closed compound word made up of three root words. When you split the words out into a three-word phrase, it could be understood to mean the opposite of the original compound word. Well, my intended answer was woebegone, but I also accepted notwithstanding. Our winner this week is Kelsey Seymour, who listens to KPOV in Bend, Oregon.
It's so easy to imagine it all gone. Could disappear.
We're well into yard work and outdoor eating season here in Oregon, so send me four words for structures that you might find in a yard. one each containing the letters W, X, Y, and Z. For instance, for V, you could have sent pavilion. There are multiple answers to this puzzle, but you only need to send one word per letter. So again, send me four words for structures that you might find in a yard, one each containing a W, X, Y, and Z. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of May 27th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 31st, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Sam Bauman, Jasmine Moss, and my co-anchor, Reed Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Farah Siddiqui, Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegetoff, and Pearl Stark. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to